Check 1, 2. Okay, this is the interview with Jerry Royal about House Bill 2. Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Today we're going to be speaking with a special member of our staff, Jerry Royal, who serves as counsel and director of community impact for NC Family. Clearly one of the hottest topics in North Carolina over the last year has been the passage of House Bill 2, or North Carolina's Bathroom Privacy and Safety Law. Jerry serves as one of our registered lobbyists and spends a great deal of time at the North Carolina General Assembly working with state lawmakers and seeking to inform and educate them about issues that are important to families across our state and the impact that those issues will have on families. Since the state legislature came back into session on January 25th, and House Bill 2 remains a hot topic of discussion, we thought it would be particularly helpful to revisit this bill and discuss what it actually does. There has been so much information circulated about House Bill 2 and so many misconceptions out there in the public, so we thought it would be helpful to take an opportunity to clear the air about some of the myths and misconceptions surrounding this very common sense and important piece of legislation. Jerry, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. It's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you, John. Great to work together.
Well, it is a pleasure to work together, Jerry, and we really appreciate very much your commitment to speaking on behalf of families and family values at the General Assembly. You spend countless hours down there meeting with lawmakers and developing relationships with them, which really provides the opportunity to enter into discussions about important legislation like House Bill 2. Jerry, as we get started, why don't we talk a little bit about the history of House Bill 2? What events transpired that led to the consideration and the passage of House Bill 2 in March of 2016?
Well, last year, in February, the Charlotte City Council made some changes in their ordinances in two significant areas. One is, and this is the part that most people have heard about and are most familiar with, in the area of privacy and safety as it relates to public restrooms, locker rooms, and showers. They had a provision in their ordinances for 30 years that had recognized that it was important to make distinctions in those areas of privacy and safety as it related to people making decisions about how policy applied to restrooms, locker rooms, and shower rooms, that those would be designated based on biological sex. That was an exception that was made in the non-discrimination policy, realizing that this was an important distinction to make as far as protecting the privacy and safety of citizens.
And so that ordinance essentially said, and as you said, it had been in place for 30 years in the city of Charlotte, and that ordinance essentially said if men or women need to use a restroom or go to a shower or bathhouse that was a public facility, that men would simply go to the men's room and women would go to the women's room, and it was perfectly fine. And actually the understood standard for that to be the case in the city of Charlotte. And that's what they sought to essentially repeal in the set of ordinance changes that the Charlotte City Council passed in February, correct?
That is correct. And the change would have allowed people to choose which facilities they use based on how they identified, not their biological sex, but which sex they identified with.
So essentially a man who identified as a woman could then enter into a woman's bathroom or shower or locker room or changing facility, and under that new ordinance that the Charlotte City Council adopted, that would be perfectly fine.
That is correct. That's what that change would have done, and that's why the legislature saw this as an important area for them to address. In addition to that, there was another major change that was made in their ordinances, which related to the non-discrimination laws as they applied to commercial activity in the city of Charlotte, whether it was people doing business within the city or people doing business from outside Charlotte with the city of Charlotte, that they would have been required to add sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes in addition to the classes that had been recognized for many years under state and federal law such as race, color, national origin, and religion, and sex as it was understood to apply to biological sex. But this change would have created the problem that we're seeing across our country, where when these sexual orientation gender identity protections are added as protected classes, there's a conflict with the religious freedom or religious liberty of citizens.
And this is where we've seen lawsuits or actions brought by governments against bakers and florists and photographers and videographers and other folks, particularly those associated with the wedding industry. And so this would have invited all of these types of issues into North Carolina. We're fortunate enough that we haven't had these so-called SOGI or sexual orientation gender identity laws or ordinances in our state, but this would have been this would have created the beginning, essentially, of what we've seen in many of these other municipalities across the country.
That's correct. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Jerry, also one of the major catalysts for House Bill 2 was a conflict that was created by the actions of the Charlotte City Council when compared to North Carolina's longstanding governance doctrine, which is referred to as Dillon's Rule. What is Dillon's Rule, that doctrine, and how does it apply in this case?
Well, it's a legal principle that's applied by over 30 states, which means that within those states, local governments only have the authority that's been given to them by the state constitution and the state legislature. And that really is an overriding principle that really, when you apply it to the situation in Charlotte, if you just step back and said, what do we need to do? It would be just to apply this principle and say Charlotte did not have the authority to pass the ordinances which they had passed back in February of 2016. And then really that's part of what the legislature ended up saying, but this is the underlying principle in the action that was taken by the legislature.
And I think that's a really important thing for our listeners to understand, and this is something that's really not been discussed that much when it comes to what we've heard about House Bill 2, is that there has been this longstanding principle in North Carolina that city and county governments are essentially a subset of the state government. And as you said, they derive all of their authority either from the Constitution or acts that are passed specifically giving them authority from the North Carolina General Assembly. And so for a city or county to go off, some people may refer to it to go rogue, in essence, and start passing ordinances and laws that conflict or that departs significantly from state law is a violation of this Dillon Rule principle. And I think that's what we saw, and that's exactly what we saw in North Carolina, and that's part of what the legislature recognized in their need to pass House Bill 2. Now, Jerry, when the General Assembly came into special session in March of 2016 following the actions by the Charlotte City Council, really with an intent to rein in the Charlotte City Council from going far afield of the authority that they had, our lawmakers passed House Bill 2. What exactly does House Bill 2 do? As I said, let me start that again. Well, Jerry, when the General Assembly came back into special session in March of 2016, in order to rein in the actions of the Charlotte City Council, they passed House Bill 2. What exactly does House Bill 2 do?
There are three sections for House Bill 2. The first section deals with what we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, is the bathroom, restroom, locker room policy. And they established really a statewide privacy and safety law, which really just codified existing state policy. What they did in that was for all public schools and government agencies, they set a policy for, and the way this section's entitled is single-sex multiple occupancy bathrooms and changing facilities. It meant that for multiple occupancy facilities, those could only be occupied by people of the same biological sex. Now, they did make provision in there, that section of the law, where accommodations could be made by providing single occupancy facilities. So they were being sensitive to the fact that there were concerns that some people had, but they also wanted to make sure that the privacy and safety of our citizens was being protected under our state law, and that local law could not override that principle.
So if you had a circumstance where you have a student in a school or an individual who works for the government or something like that, or just a member of the public who went to a public facility, and they had some misgivings about going into a bathroom or shower that coordinated with their biological sex, that this actually does allow for accommodation to be made for them to use a single stall facility, for example, for their private functions.
That is correct.
And that's something that I think was glossed over in much of the media coverage of this legislation, that suggested that there was no accommodation made, but there actually was. And so there was some flexibility provided in this, but it did set the statewide standard that in public, individuals would use the bathroom, shower, locker room, or changing facility that associated with their biological sex.
That is correct. Now, also, just as a point of clarification, this law does not affect the ability of private businesses and nonprofit corporations to set their own policy about these questions.
Right.
This relates to public facilities, as I say, like in our school systems or in government buildings.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I think that's an important distinction, because we heard from some in the business community that this bill was created so many problems, and some business executives suggested boycotts or not expanding their business opportunities in the state, but this bill does not impact the ability that they have to adopt internal policies relating to bathroom usage.
That is correct.
Yeah. Continue on with the explanation of the bill.
Okay. The other sections look really at the commercial impact of the ordinance that was passed by Charlotte. And again, this relates to non-discrimination law, which up to that point had been the same as our state and federal laws. But what Charlotte was doing and the state needed to address was the fact that our state is the governing authority who determines what happens on a state level and looks out for the general welfare of the people. In part two of the law, it's entitled Statewide Consistency in Laws Related to Employment and Contracting. And what would have happened under the changes in Charlotte is local governments could be making requirements, again, on commercial activity within their area of authority that affected wages and hours, as far as what people's policy could be within their private companies. And what this pointed out through this provision of the law was to clarify that these are state policies that are determined on a statewide level. Now, governments are allowed to make their own policies for their own employees, but when they start making decisions that affect commerce across the state, that's where the legislature needed to come in and clarify that was outside the authority of local governments.
Mm. Very good. And it also, in a subsequent section of the bill, dealt with public accommodations, which are basically, according to the ordinances that were in place in Charlotte, would essentially have applied to any business, association, nonprofit, and even churches and church-related schools, as we could tell, that basically said they would have to also conform to these same policies and the same definition of adoption of sexual orientation and gender identity and open bathrooms, or else they could be subject to penalties and things of that nature, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. So that was one of the measures that House Bill 2 sought to rein in and basically say that the city of Charlotte, and frankly, for that matter, other cities and counties across the state, did not have the authority to adopt. Now, if the state legislature saw fit to adopt a statewide policy doing that same thing, that it was within the purview of the state legislature, but it was not within the purview of any city or county to adopt the Charlotte-style ordinances.
That's correct.
Well, anything else, Jerry, that House Bill 2 does? We've heard so much about it.
Yeah, there was one other provision that was in the original law that actually has been removed, and that related to lawsuits that were brought for wrongful discharge from employment. And what had initially been part of the law was a provision that said that those causes of action could only be brought under federal law. They could be brought in state or federal court under federal law, but it would have eliminated the state law cause of action. The legislature later in 2016 reversed or repealed that section of the law. And part of the rationale when they put that provision in there, when they discussed it in the original debate, was that there are actually more remedies under federal law. But people pointed out that they still thought that it was important that the state cause of action, state law cause of action, still be part of the remedies that were available. And so the legislature chose to put that provision back into the law. But the rest of House Bill 2 has stayed in place.
Well, Jerry, according to much of what we've heard and especially seen and read in the media, North Carolina must have gone very far afield when they passed House Bill 2. Talk about that for just a minute. Was the adoption of House Bill 2 some far-out action taken by the General Assembly, or was it actually in line with what we see in other states?
Very much actually in line with what we see across the country. In fact, North Carolina is one of 28 states that basically have the same laws as it relates to non-discrimination laws. Again, as mentioned earlier, areas like race, color, religion, national origin, and sex, and with understanding that that is biological sex. Those 28 states, as well as the federal government in their statutes, do not include sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes. So North Carolina is very much in line with more than a majority of the states, as well as with our federal statutes.
Hmm. Well, one other claim that's been made too, Jerry, by opponents of House Bill 2 is the portrayal of the notion that this bill has had disastrous effects on North Carolina's economy. Are these claims justified?
Not at all. We actually, as recently as November, there were two, and that was, of course, months after House Bill 2 was passed, really more than 6 months afterwards, that you see national ratings putting North Carolina right up at the top as far as it relates to doing business, a place to do business, and place to live in our country. Forbes and magazine and Site Selection magazine both rated North Carolina as number two in the nation for places to do business or the best business climate. As far as best places to live, there again, at the end of the year, there were national ratings that put a number of our cities, five of our cities in the top 100, three in the top 15 in the United States. And our economy continues to be one of the fastest growing in our country. The number of people employed has increased dramatically. The unemployment has decreased. All these indicators show that North Carolina, economically and just as far as a place for people to live, is right up at the very top.
Well, that's great information to hear, and we've seen that repeatedly in recent years, that North Carolina just has a booming economy, and as some politicians like to say, we are definitely open for business, and we are. But all of these reports show that North Carolina is doing great, that these national organizations and news and media outlets and others who look at these ratings and the criteria that go into these ratings on an ongoing basis continue to cite North Carolina as one of the top states in the nation for business, the top states in the nation to live, and that sort of thing. So that really debunks a lot of these false claims that are being made about the impact or so-called impact that House Bill 2 has had on our state. Now, Jerry, we are just about out of time for this week, but before we depart, I want to give you an opportunity just to let our listeners know what you see as the future of House Bill 2 in the current session of the General Assembly. It still remains very much a hot topic. What do you anticipate is going to happen with House Bill 2 this session?
Well, it's hard to know what is going to happen this year. There was an effort at the end of last year with some of the leadership in the legislature trying to see if there was a way to actually repeal House Bill 2, but there were a number of factors that kept that effort from moving ahead. And one of those was the fact that when part of the agreement was going to be that Charlotte would totally repeal the provisions that they had passed in February, and then that the legislature would come back and repeal House Bill 2. Well, what Charlotte did on a Monday in December was to only repeal part of their ordinance that had been passed in February, and they actually added a provision saying that once the legislature repealed House Bill 2, that they then said they would have the authority to come back and pass similar provisions. So that naturally created a lot of unrest among the legislators. The Charlotte City Council did come back a few days later and repealed what they had written on that Monday. This was on a Wednesday. They came back and said, well, we're going to repeal what we passed on Monday and repeal. They did it with one sentence, which was very clear, repealed what they had passed in February. But at that point, people already were very wary of what might happen because Charlotte actually put in writing that they saw themselves as really having the authority to come back and do what had caused all this controversy a year ago. So there is just a lot of uncertainty about where things might go in this upcoming session.
Well, and that was one of the things that we had explained to legislators in this process. There was some discussion about, and some folks used the term reset, to go back to a reset to where the Charlotte City Council would repeal their ordinances, and then the legislature would come back in and repeal House Bill 2, and it would put us back to square one. But we communicated to lawmakers that it was impossible to go back to square one because of all that had happened with House Bill 2. And also the reality, as you said, that the city of Charlotte even kind of showed their hand as to what their intentions were, that if the General Assembly and when the General Assembly repealed House Bill 2 in full, that they would simply come back behind that and reenact the ordinances that that they had put in place last February. And then we have seen other cities like the city of Durham or the Durham, is it the city or county?
I'm not sure which indicated that, but a number of local governments across the state, more than a
I'm going to go back and record that. And so, and then we also saw we saw Durham say that they were poised to enact a very similar ordinance changes to what Charlotte did. And we certainly suspect that there were other cities and or counties around the state that would look at doing the same thing. And so it was very clear that if the General Assembly repealed House Bill 2, that there was nothing to keep cities and counties from adopting these Charlotte-like ordinances and doing exactly what the city of Charlotte had done. So what was the General Assembly going to do after that? Would they come back and pass another House Bill 2? Probably not, because of all the controversy that surrounded it. So there really was no way to go back to a so-called reset before all of this activity transpired in the winter of last year. And so we just continue to encourage our lawmakers to stand firm on House Bill 2. When the governor called this special session near the end of December, the week before Christmas, to look at this repeal, both the House and Senate Republican caucuses clearly did not have the votes within their caucus to favor a repeal of House Bill 2, and so they adjourned that special session, taking no action on House Bill 2, which we were grateful for. But I think it still shows the commitment that a lot of legislators in the General Assembly have towards standing firm on House Bill 2.
That is correct, exactly.
Well, Jerry, what can citizens who are interested in House Bill 2, who feel that it's an important measure to keep in place, the things that you've talked about, the bathroom privacy and safety measures, the other measures that are consistent with the Dillon's Rule doctrine, that cities and counties only derive the authority that they have from the General Assembly and from the Constitution, and that it's really our state lawmakers who have the proper role of making decisions about these anti-discrimination laws in North Carolina, and that it's proper for them to rein in city and county governments if they go too far. What can citizens do if they are interested in and continue to be concerned about the legislature considering bills that would repeal House Bill 2?
Well, on our website at ncfamily.org, you can see a lot of the history of House Bill 2. In the search box there on our website, if you just put in HB2, it'll pull up all the publications that we have produced relating to House Bill 2. As far as actually getting involved and responding, we also on our website, if you click on Get Involved, and then it has Take Action, which you can click on there, and it'll take you to a section where there's information about House Bill 2 and specifically how you can contact your members of the North Carolina House and Senate through email. And also, as we've mentioned previously, in addition to emails, it's great to be in touch with them on an even more personal level through phone calls or even a personal visit.
Well, that's great, and I would just encourage our listeners, if this is an issue that is of interest and concern to you, that you do take action. Even if you've contacted your legislators before, now is the time to do it again as they come back into session and as they are revisiting this issue and hearing about it discussed within the halls of the General Assembly, and especially the new members of the legislature who have not had the privilege of dealing with this issue over the last year. I think it's important for them to understand where citizens within their districts are coming from as it relates to this issue and others. So as we always do, we want to encourage citizens to be active and engaged, to reach out to your lawmakers, and know that it really does make a difference when you do that. It's important for them, for these state lawmakers, to hear from folks back home, and they really do consider what folks back home have to say.
It is. It's always important, but as we have seen, because this issue has gone on for so long, this is a very important part of the life of our state. I think that we all need to communicate with each other about what we think is best for our citizens.
Well, and Jerry, in that light, too, I think it's important to recognize the role that North Carolina has nationally in this. We have really been the focal point of a lot of the discussion and debate around privacy and safety legislation like House Bill 2, as well as the other provisions that are contained in the bill. And a lot of states continue to look to North Carolina as a leader and an example in this area. And it is so important for our legislators to stand firm, to continue to defend this law, because it does set a standard for other states across the nation. And fortunately, with the new year upon us and legislatures going into session across the country, we have seen a number of state legislatures in a number of other states take up legislation like this. And so they understand how critically important it is to protect the privacy and safety of women and children in public facilities like bathrooms, showers, locker rooms, and changing facilities, and have sought to pursue legislation similar to House Bill 2. And with that, Jerry, I just want to say thank you so much. And with that, Jerry Royal, I want to just thank you so much for your continued commitment to And with that, Jerry Royal, I want to thank you so much for your continued great work on behalf of families and family values in the North Carolina General Assembly and otherwise through your work here at the North Carolina Family Policy Council. And just want to encourage our listeners to reach out and contact your lawmakers about this and other important matters as the General Assembly gets cranked up for the 2017 legislative session.
You're welcome, John. And again, it's a blessing to work together with you and other citizens across the state.
Great. Hey, Jake, I'm going to add in one more plug for our magazine, too. You might slot this in after Jerry's portion on some of the other resources on our website. Well, Jerry, I'd also like to mention that we do have a special edition of our flagship publication, Family North Carolina Magazine, that is dedicated to straightening out a lot of these misperceptions about House Bill 2. It's a great resource. It kind of approaches the House Bill 2 issue from a variety of different perspectives. And the feedback that we continue to get on that publication in particular is just is very, very strong. People find it to be very, very helpful to understand all of the dynamics that are at play on this very important issue. So I do want to encourage our listeners, if they don't have a copy of that edition of Family North Carolina Magazine, to go to our website and go to the magazine page, and you can download a copy of the entire magazine edition there, or you can read those individual articles online. And that can be found at ncfamily.org. Again, that's ncfamily.org. Okay, thanks.